saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection. Choose from 26 stylish colors and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Welcome back to Michigan's Missing Angels with the Underestimated podcast. I'm Tegan.
I'm McKenna.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Emery.
For weeks, we follow the trail of Kim Lara. We've looked into the dark history of Arthur Rehm, a man whose capacity for violence was proven, yet whose full list of victims remain a mystery, locked behind a prison cell, and now the grave. But in the late 1970s, Southeast Michigan wasn't just afraid of one man.
Between February 1976 and March 1977, the suburban white picket fence of Oakland County, Michigan, was systematically dismantled. This wasn't just a series of tragic disappearances, it was a physiological siege that turned neighbors against neighbors and transformed the daily act of walking to a convenience store into a life or death gamble.
The perpetrator, or perhaps multiple of them, operated with a chilling clinical sense of control that defied the typical profile of a disorganized killer. These children weren't simply taken and discarded, they were kept. In several instances, victims were held for days or even weeks in what can only be described as a captive domestic environment.
The investigation that followed remains one of the largest and most grueling in American history, generating over 16,000 tips and a haunting profile of a killer, nicknamed the Babysitter, or better known as the Oakland County Child Killer, who seemed to move through these wealthy communities like a ghost.
He didn't leave bodies in hidden graves or dark woods. He placed them in highly visible locations, often just feet from busy roadways or in plain sight of businesses, almost as if he were daring the world to look at what he had done. The condition of these victims was the most harrowing detail of all. Many have been bathed, their clothes have been freshly washed or neatly pressed, and their bodies posed with a ritualistic precision that suggested a twisted sense of care.
Whether this was the work of a lone wolf with a profound knowledge of police perimeter tactics, or a deeper, more systematic rot involving a predator network like the one discovered on North Fox Island, the signature left behind at each crime scene was unmistakable. It was a signature of dominance, patience, and absolute coldness. It is within this atmosphere of paralyzing terror, where schools let out early and parents slept with shotguns by their beds, that we begin to look at the four young lives whose name becomes a tragic face of the unsolved mystery.
It began on February 15, 1976. 12-year-old Mark Stebbins left an American Legion Hall in Ferndale. He was walking home and he never made it. 4 days later, his body was found in a corporate parking lot in Southfield. He had been strangled and sexually assaulted. But the most chilling detail? He was wearing the same clothes he disappeared in, neatly arranged on a pile of dirt and wood. The investigation that followed would become the largest in U.S. history at the time, but the killer was just getting started. 10 months passed. The fear had begun to simmer down. Then came the winter of 76.
Next, 12-year-old Jill Robinson. She disappeared from Royal Oak on December 22nd after a minor argument with her mother. Her bicycle was found behind a hobby shop. On Christmas Day, while families were unwrapping gifts, Jill was still missing. The next morning, her body was found along I-75 in Troy. She had been killed by a single gunshot blast to the face. Unlike Mark, she had not been sexually assaulted. She was still wearing her backpack.
Less than 2 weeks later, 10-year-old Christine Mihelic, taken from a 7-Eleven in Berkeley, she was held for 19 days. When she was finally found on a rural road in Franklin Village, she was dead, but fully clothed and cared for. The autopsy showed that she had been smothered only 24 hours before she was found. The community realized this wasn't a series of random tragedies. Someone was babysitting these children before ending their lives.
The terror peaked in March 1977 with Timothy King. On March 16th, he left his home at 8:15 p.m. to buy 30 cents worth of candy at the neighborhood drugstore. He made the purchase and vanished. His disappearance sparked a massive green ribbon campaign. Even the killer seemed to be watching. A letter sent to Timothy's parents claimed he was being cared for and would be returned. 6 days later, he was found in a ditch in Livonia. His body, still warm, was found beside a dirt road 11 miles away. He was fully clothed and laid out with almost ritual care. The skateboard he had carried was neatly placed next to him. Timothy had been smothered to death.
An autopsy revealed signs of sexual abuse, and there were marks around his wrists and ankles suggesting that he had been tied. His body was strikingly clean. He was scrubbed. His fingernails and toenails were immaculate, says Wayne County Medical Examiner Werner Spitz.
He had been bathed, his clothes were clean, and he was fed. It was a bizarre, almost preparation for a grim end. But it was his last meal that baffled investigators: Kentucky Fried Chicken. Medical examiners confirmed that Timothy King's final meal was KFC. It wasn't just a random choice either. Fried chicken was his favorite. This detail changed everything, shifting the investigation into a much darker territory. How could a predatory stranger have known the favorite meal of a random child? Was it merely a grotesque coincidence, a lucky guess by a monster, or did it point to something far more sinister? It suggested that Timothy's killer wasn't a stranger at all, but rather someone who had earned his trust, someone the children felt safe around, safe enough to share their innocent and everyday secrets with.
The same remarkable fastidiousness points to a single killer in three other child murders: Mark Stebbins, 12, a quiet boy who lived with his divorced mother in Ferndale, was found in a parking lot on February 19, 1976, 17 days after he disappeared. The body of Jill Robinson, 12, was discovered December 16th beside a freeway, 4 days after she was reported missing from her home in Royal Oak. Christine Mihelic, a brown-haired, blue-eyed 10-year-old from nearby Berkeley, vanished on January 2nd. Her body turned up 18 days later in a roadside snowbank.
These victims may all have been sexually molested. The Stebbins boy was. Each body was found fully clothed. Two were dead from having been smothered. The exceptions was Jill Robinson, killed by a shotgun blast that the police think accidentally occurred when the killer panicked. All the children, including Timothy King, were last seen within a few blocks of Oakland County's main north-south commercial street, Woodward.
The central mystery remains: was the Oakland County child killer a single calculating lone wolf, or was this the work of a wider, organized pedophile ring like the one discovered on North Fox Island? Decades later, investigators and families are still left to wonder if the babysitter acted entirely on his own, or if he was merely one part of a much larger, more coordinated nightmare.
Big money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection. Choose from 26 stylish colors and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.
For decades, the Oakland County child killer case has been defined by four names: Mark, Jill, Christine, and Timothy. These are the confirmed victims, the ones who fit the precise ritualistic profile of the babysitter. But when you look at the map of Southeast Michigan in the mid-70s, a haunting question begins to emerge. Was the killer truly that surgical, or are we looking at a much wider, more chaotic web of disappearances?
If we step outside the strict parameters of the four confirmed cases, we find a trail of missing girls whose stories shared chilling DNA with the OCCK mystery. Girls like Kim Larrow, Kimberly King, Donna Sarah, Cynthia Kuhn, and Nadine O'Dell. The first connection is the most obvious: geography. All of these girls vanished within a relatively small radius. During the same era of atmospheric dread, Nadine O'Dell disappeared in 1974 while walking to her grandparents' house in Inkster. Cynthia Kuhn vanished from Washtenaw County in 1970. Donna Sarah disappeared from Warren in 1973.
While these dates predate the official babysitter window of 76 to 77, many investigators believe a killer doesn't just start with the level of sophistication seen in the Mark Stebbins case. They practice. They evolve. Was the OCCK honing his keeping methods with these girls years before the media gave him a name?
Then there are the names. It's a detail that has haunted researchers for years. The babysitter's final confirmed victim was Timothy King. Just 2 years later, in 1979, Kimberly King, no relation, vanished from Warren after leaving her grandparents' home.
And then we have Kim Larrow, who disappeared from Canton in 1981. We have spent this series looking at Arthur Ream's potential involvement with Kim. But we have to ask, was Ream part of the same shadow world that the Oakland County child killer inhabited? The methods overlap. The targeting of children in transition, the predatory comfort in suburban landscapes, and the agonizing silence that followed.
The struggle with connecting these girls to the OCCK lies in the signature. The babysitter was known for returning the bodies, clothed, washed, and displayed. The girls we've been talking about, Kim, Kimberly, Donna, Cynthia, and Nadine, were never found. They are the long-term missing.
Does this mean the killer was different, or does it mean the killer changed his tactics? If the OCCK was part of the pedophile ring, a theory bolstered by the discovery of the North Fox Island photos, then the confirmed victims might have been the statements, while the others were victims of a darker, more permanent concealment.
If Arthur Ream was involved in the disappearance of Kim Larrow, as many suspect, does that also place him in the orbit of the babysitter? Or were there multiple predators hunting the same streets, obscured by each other's shadows? When we look at Nadine O'Dell's walk home or Donna Sarah's final moments in Warren, we aren't just looking at cold cases. We are looking at a community that was being hunted from multiple angles. Whether it was one monster or a pack of them, the result was the same: a generation of stolen childhoods and a map of Michigan marked by holes that can never be filled. While these girls leave us with more questions than answers, we don't have to look for those answers alone. To help break down the timelines, the theories, and the pieces that just don't fit.
Saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection. Choose from 26 stylish colors and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Honestly, after sitting in class researching and looking at these old files the whole year, it hits us hard. Kim was 15. That is so incredibly young and not far from all our ages. It is wild to think about how easily a person can just be reduced to a runaway label or a dusty archive box, while the rest of the world just keeps moving on. But for Kim's family and her friend Brenda, time didn't just heal things. It left an empty space. And at the end of the day, this isn't just a grade for us. It's about reminding people that Kim matters. That being said, we want to give a huge thank you to Nina Instead from the Already Gone podcast for helping us sort through the history of this case. And an even bigger thank you to Kim's family and the Canton community members who have just refused to let her memory fade.
Whether Arthur Ream was actually involved in Kim's disappearance or not, the truth is still out there somewhere. Kim is still missing, and 45 years later, justice is still waiting. But as we dug deeper into the 2018 Macomb Township searches, we realized Kim's name doesn't sit alone in these files. She is part of a much bigger, much more haunting picture. A list of girls from the same area who went missing under a cloud of similar theories. Kimberly King, Kelly Brownlee, Nadine O'Dell, Cynthia Kuhn, and Donna Sarah.
Putting this all together was a lot. When you look at Arthur Ream's history, it's easy to get angry. He feels like the perfect answer to a terrible puzzle. He had the pattern, he had the history, and we know what he did to Cindy Zarzycki. It makes sense why investigators spent so much time and money digging up fields in Macomb Township, trying to find the truth. But we've learned in this class, journalism isn't about picking the easiest narrative. It's about sticking to what we can actually prove. And the reality is, the digs came up too empty.
And with Ream passing away in prison back in 2024, any answers he might have been hiding are just gone. That leaves Kim's family and so many other families stuck in this incredibly painful limbo. Ream casts a massive shadow over these cold cases, but a shadow isn't a conviction. It doesn't bring Kim home. That's the biggest takeaway for our group this year. It's so easy to get caught up in the psychology of a monster like Arthur Ream that we forget the real people at the center of this. Kim Lara wasn't just a potential name on a serial killer's list. Cindy Zarzycki wasn't just a headline. They were kids our age who had their whole lives stolen from them.
We also want to say thank you to Detective Joe Kiemig and everyone who helped us understand the legal side of these investigations. Your support keeps us moving forward because even though Ream is gone, the search for the truth definitely isn't over. Kim's name isn't the only one caught in this shadow. There are other girls, other families, and other stories from the exact same era that police were trying to connect.
In the first episode, we were looking at just Kim's case. But opening up the files on Nadine, Cindy, Kimberly, Kelly, and Donna, it completely changes how you look at the whole map of Southeast Michigan. It's wild and incredibly frustrating to realize how a predator like Arthur Ream could just exploit the whole system back then. He figured out that if he targeted girls who were already feeling lonely or labeled as rebellious, the world would basically look the other way and let the tracks go cold.
He didn't just hide his crimes in the dirt, he hid them behind the labels people gave these girls. And because he passed away, he took those final secrets with him to the grave. It leaves this massive, heavy silence for the families who are still waiting. But like we said at the start of the semester, our goal isn't just to talk about suspects. It's to make sure these girls aren't treated like footnotes or just a runaway ghost story. They were real people, and they deserve to be found. Zooming out and looking at the whole picture is terrifying. We started this podcast just trying to figure out what happened to Kim Lara. But the more you look into the Southeast Michigan in the 70s and 80s, the more it feels like a total horror movie. You have Arthur Ream hiding his crimes in the dirt on one side, and then you have the absolute nightmare of the Oakland County child killer on the other side, turning these perfect, wealthy suburbs into a haunting ground.
And what hits the hardest is how these cases all overlap in the worst ways. Was the babysitter a single person who just got smarter and changed his tactics, or were these girls, Kim, Kimberly, Donna, Cynthia, and Nadine, caught up in a much larger organized network? It makes you wonder if there were actually multiple monsters using the chaos of each other's shadows to get away with it.
It's a lot to process, and honestly, it leaves you with more questions than answers. But that's exactly why we can't stop looking into it.
And that's it for Michigan's Missing Angels with the Underestimated podcast. Thank you all so much for listening these past 6 episodes, and we wouldn't be here without your support. Underestimated. Michigan Missing Angels was researched, written, and produced by Brendan, Tegan, McKenna, and Emery. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Tegan. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.